Well, first of all, welcome to this meditation retreat here. It's nice and cool here, so you can all chill out. That's what one of the epithets, some of the names they call the Buddha, called Sitibuddha, which means one who is very cool. So if we could turn the aircon off, and then take the blankets away, and then you too can be cool, just like the Buddha. Is that a good idea?
No.
No. Very good. So anyway, welcome to this retreat center. Salamat pagi. Ciao an. So what time did you get in last night? How much? 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nothing. What about in the Hong Kong East? What time did you get in?
In the morning.
Oh, that's nah. So whatever. Now, the first day today, you can have a pretty free and easy day. So we decided, I think, with Della, not to have any sutta class this afternoon. No sutta class this afternoon. So just to cancel things which are really important. So no lunch. <Let's see. laughs> No, we always have the lunches and stuff. So this is a little meditation retreat for you. I know many of you haven't done meditation before, and some have. But you can't be that good, otherwise you would have to come back again. So what it means is we learn how to do our meditation very peacefully. It's all about relaxing, learning how just to come to a state of stillness. So in order to be still, we have to learn how just to do lots and lots and lots of letting go, and to come into the present moment. The only way we can get into the present moment is to let go of the past and future. So first of all, the past and the future, we can sort of force them to disappear, say, get out of here, you don't belong, but you'll find the more you force things away, the stronger they become. So it's the old story of the anger-eating monster. If a monster comes into the palace and the king says, get out of here, you don't belong, the monster only gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So whatever difficulty or problem you have, please always remember, when you try and force it out, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So in order to let go of the past and the future, we learn how to be kind to the past and kind to the future. We don't give it anger, we don't give it ill will, we don't try and get rid of it. We are kind to it. And how, what do we mean about being kind to the past? I don't know the bad things which you did, the terrible things which you have managed to do, but never mind. You were just probably tired. You're in a bad mood. You must be going through, what's it called, PMS? It's really unfair. Guys don't get that. So we've got not the same excuses as you have. But you can say PTS, post-traumatic stress. It's very traumatic being an abbot, so I think I can say I've got post-traumatic stress syndrome. Now find some excuse. If you find an excuse to be soft to the past, to let it go, give it up, never mind, then you find it doesn't obsess you so much. Or if you think, well, that's a terrible thing I did, but if I hadn't done those terrible things, I wouldn't be here. So that's why many times when people say, oh, they come to a meditation retreat because now they've lost their job or someone's cheated them or they've lost their partner. They say, wonderful, you're so lucky. I always say, if my girlfriend hadn't dumped me, I would never become a monk. So we look at the past, not with upset and anger. We see the positive side of it. In other words, we're kind to it. And when you're kind to the past, it's very easy to let it go. And they're saying, well, other people did to you. They sued you and took all your money. You can get angry at them, but whoa, great. Now I haven't got so many things to worry about. They made me closer to becoming a monk or a nun. Just like, when was it when we had that workshop robbed? The burglar came into the workshop. Was it a year ago?
Oh, a couple of years ago.
Yeah. A couple of years ago. Yeah, we had a workshop over in Bodhinyana. A burglar came in and he stole a generator and chainsaws and expensive drills. What else did he take?
Well, that's about it.
That's about it, yeah. But we did we get angry at it? No.
No.
I didn't anyway. You need some more training. Because it was insured. So the money we got back from insurance, that actually paid for a new chainsaw, better generator, new state-of-the-art drills, and I think we still had some money back afterwards, we made a profit. So in a couple of years' time, as we need to replace those things, we're going to advertise for a burglar to come in and take it away again. So it's a positive experience. It was win-win. The burglar was happy, the monastery was happy, and the insurance company probably wasn't. But that's like looking at the past and giving it a positive spin, so you don't get angry and upset about it. You don't obsess about what happened in the past. Because, yeah, you may think, oh, it's a terrible thing which happened to me. Oh, this was really awful, and why me? So, wow, it's a wonderful opportunity. No, you've got to let go eventually anyway. They're just teaching you how to let go. So when you're kind to the past, it doesn't obsess you at all. You can let it go so easily. And the same with the future. Be kind to the future. And just a couple of nights ago, when I was in Singapore on my way back from New York, I gave a talk because it was very close to Ajahn Chah's 99th birthday, if he was still alive. So I never really given much of a talk about Ajahn Chah, my time with him. So I decided to give a talk about that. And as I mentioned, one of those, just the way he used to teach me about how to be positive to the future. Because when I was really sick in hospital with typhus fever for weeks, feeling really terrible, that's when he came in and told me how to be kind to the future. He said, you'll either get better or you'll die. Neither way the sickness won't last. And of course, that's so true. So what have you got to worry about? Either way, it doesn't last. So if you look at it with a positive attitude to the future, with kindness, you don't worry about anything. So what can go wrong? It's not actually wrong. If something goes wrong, it's really right. I've often said, you all know about if ever I get blown up in an aircraft at 30,000 feet. You all know the three advantages of that. So you're not afraid of dying in an aircraft explosion. And you probably all know that, said it many times. Number one, it's a free cremation. You don't have to pay any money for it, because it's really, really expensive. It's not so much actually the cremation which is expensive, but inviting all the friends and over for lunch and breakfast and dinner. You have to feed so many people, and most of those people you don't know anyway, but they come in just to eat your food, so it costs a lot of money. And number two, it really takes a lot of time as well, organising a funeral. So if it's in an aircraft explosion, it's free, efficient, you get your ashes scattered as well, by the way, all for free. You don't have to worry about where you're going to put the ashes of your loved one. And last one, of course, if you die at 30,000 feet in aircraft explosion, You're so close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. So in other words, look at it in a positive way. Which means, that's what I mean by being kind to the future. And if, you know, I was telling all these silly jokes about Donald Trump when I was in the United States. I don't know if you've heard one of those jokes. You've probably heard them so many times. But the joke about that he was, when he went to visit the Pope. And he went to visit the Pope recently. And in private he said he's getting so much bad press in the United States, especially from the New York Times and the Washington Post, that can the Pope help him? He said, I'll see what I can do with the boss upstairs. So a few days later he said, I've spoken to God and he wants to help you. So, tomorrow morning, in front of the White House, there's this big reflection pond. He said, go out there and walk on the water. You'll find you can do that, special privilege. And he said that should impress somebody. So the next day he went in there with all the press corps following him and protesters as well. And he actually walked on the water. And the next day the New York Times, Washington Post, their headlines read, Donald Trump, more incompetent than we thought, can't even swim. The moral of the story is, when someone's got it in for you, no matter what you do, they can always see the negative side of it. But, because I was telling jokes about Donald Trump and I was in the United States, I was a bit concerned when you went through security, when you were leaving, you weren't pulled aside and put into rendition in Guantanamo Bay, but I survived. But I always thought, if you did get arrested, that's even better! Woohoo! I can relax now! When you're in prison, you get 3 meals a day, not 2, you can watch the TV, and if you ever want to do a retreat, all you need to do is to punch a prison officer on the nose, and they put you in solitary for 3 months. A 3-month retreat. I never get that here. So, this is like being kind to the future. Wonderful little way, and then you don't worry about the future. You can't obsess about it. Which means we can be peaceful, we can let it go. So don't try and just get rid of these things through willpower and force. We use wisdom power, part of which is like kindness. Be compassionate to the future and to the past. And of course you probably also heard me talk about how so many Buddhists have no idea at all what it means to be compassionate and kind. They all say, oh, may you be happy and well. And there are days when I don't want to be happy and well. And when I was again in the United States, I said, the US Constitution is not good enough. You say you have the right to the pursuit of pleasure. You have also the right to the pursuit of misery too. That should be your right. Don't let anyone tell you you're supposed to be happy all the time. Otherwise that makes you too stressed. Trying to be happy is a sure cause of making you miserable. The same with trying to get better when you're sick is another cause of keeping that sickness going. You're trying too hard, you get stressed. So, in this retreat, you have my permission to be sick. You have my permission to be miserable. You have my permission just to be. However you feel right now, you are accepted. The door of my heart is open to you, not even if you decide to convert to being a Muslim and put on your veil, like Susan is now doing. Your veil. So, what we are doing there is we're learning how not to control this moment. Not to say, I should be healthy, I should be happy, and telling other people that, may you have a good day. So many people say that to me, may you have a good day. And just on principle, I refuse. I'm not going to be told by you what to do. So if you say, have a good trip, I say, no, on principle, I'm not going to have a good trip. I'm not going to be told what to do. But the real compassion and kindness is, may you be happy and well if you want to. If you want to be sick, fine by me. May you be happy if you want to, but you don't have to. It's no compulsion. You can be however this moment is. That is kindness, called opening the door of your heart. With no strings attached, no control. Whatever's happening right now, you're allowed to be like this. It's called opening the door of your heart. It's called unconditional acceptance. So, if you understand that, you understand why so often when we think we have to get rid of the past, we have to get rid of the future, we have to be mindful, we have to be happy, it drives us crazy. Just the stress of it, trying to do something you're not. So, the way of meditation is learning how to be wise enough to know what kindness is. It's wonderful, opening the door of your heart to whatever's happening, and especially to your body and to your mind. Many of you are tired. Me included. I'm a crazy monk. Just came from over North America, come back here as soon as you land, back to work again. Supposed to be jet lagged, so if you find me falling asleep during my talk, don't worry, it's just nature. I'm not going to feel guilty. Yeah, that did happen. I was with this monk over in Thailand, there for the Rains Retreat, and he would give a talk, a long talk, and it's no exaggeration. In the middle of his talk, he suddenly stopped and fall asleep. His head would go down and for maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and then he'd wake up again. And it was amazing, he would continue exactly where he left off. If he recorded it and just cut that out, it would actually flow so smoothly. It was weird psychology, but that was actually true. But the point is, we never knew how long he was going to sleep for. Was that 1 minute or 15 minutes? So sometimes we got it wrong, said I was going to fall asleep for 15 minutes and went back, we'd be in big trouble. When he woke up, he said, where's he gone? So he had to stay all the time throughout the whole talk. But here we're kind enough, especially the first day, to give yourself a good rest, get accustomed to the place, get to know where everything is, and learn just how to start relaxing. No past, no future, which means no goals, no aspirations. It's what I call the three aspirations. You start with aspiration. You try and want something. And then you get desperation. When you get frustrated. And then you get expiration when you go away and leave. So that one leads to the other. So imagine having no goals. There was, years ago, this woman came up to me in Nolamara Center, and she said, this is my problem, she said. This is where I am. This is where I know I should be. And it's just so hard trying to train myself, trying to learn, trying to grow, so I'm where I know I should be. So hard pushing myself up to where I know I should be. I said, it's obvious what the solution is. Instead of where you are, trying to go to some place you'd like to be, how about where you want to be, lowering it to where you are? Problem solved. So where do you want to be in meditation, in life? If you lower that to where you are, freedom, peace. You've arrived, you're here. You've met all your expectations and aspirations when you lower them. So lower your expectations, don't raise them. Just get more stress. Just learn how to be with kindness. So when we're kind to the past and when we're kind to the future, then we may be kind to this present moment too. It's not that bad being here. Yeah, you may be sleepy, you may be tired, you may be hungry, you may be cold, you may be hot, but at least today you don't have to go to work. You don't have to rush to the airport to make sure you catch the plane in time. You don't need to be patted down by the security. You don't need... I must look very suspicious. Do I look suspicious? Because I patted down several times when I was in the United States. Maybe they thought this was a suicide choice. It's not suicide. It's just a bit overweight. It's not suicide. So you don't have to do any of that. So you're totally free today. You don't have to worry about what you're going to eat. Nice food is being cooked for you right now. You don't have to do anything. And you've got your nice little beds, your own rooms. You can go in there, and what I said I was doing yesterday, because I was staying with a friend over in Singapore trying to rest and get rid of some of the jet lag. And he said, how long do you meditate up there? And I said, I do what we call... Actually, I meditate a lot. Even when I'm tired, I meditate flat out. You know what flat out meditation is? You lie down flat out. And you let go. And you probably fall asleep. But you need it. So, you've got beautiful little beds, your rooms, your own ensuite, quiet. So you've got heaters there if you're cold, you've got blankets, you've got everything there. So just relax and let go. Especially the first day. Don't try and be the first one to get enlightened from Indonesia. Those only for smart Alecs. Those ones who want to be the fast train. Let's say it's wonderful being a Buddhist. I mean, you don't have to get enlightened this lifetime. You can get reborn, do it again next time. Just take your time, take it easy. You've got plenty of lifetimes left. So in other words, when you just try and take it easy and relax a little bit more, you find that the meditation starts to really take off. Imagine what peace is. How can you be peaceful when you're so tense trying to get somewhere? Trying to get somewhere is just looking into the future. Instead we try to be here with kindness. No past, no future, just being here. Which means you learn just how to relax and take it easy. So often when you're meditating, oh, just let's tell this story. There's many retreats I've been teaching over those many years. And this one lady, she was one of the top executives in Sydney. And I was teaching this retreat in Sydney. And she came late for the retreat, even though she lived in Sydney. She was working until about midnight and all the stuff she had to try and finish off. So she came 2 o'clock in the morning to this retreat centre. And so I never saw her then, but saw her the first talk. She got the message, and after the talk she went to bed. And it was one of those dormitories, so the other people in the dormitory saw her. As soon as the morning talk was over, she was in bed. She only got up for lunch. And after lunch she went to bed again. And she only got up in the afternoon for tea time. And she spent most of the first 3 days just sleeping all day. And the other women in the room she shared with saw that and they said, what did you let this woman into this retreat for? She's just sleeping all the time. She's wasting the opportunities. She should be striving. said, no, no, she's very smart. And then those women in the same room, I said, you know, you're not sort of criticizing her because she's wrong. You're criticizing her because you're jealous. You wish you had the guts to do something like that. But she's got my permission. And so after 3 days of sleep, 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 she overcame her sleep deficit, and then she started coming to more meditations. And she soon caught up once her body was rested and felt good. And by the end of the retreat, she overtook everybody else. She was a star meditator that retreat, because she was very wise. She worked with her body, not against it. She was mindful of her body and cared for it enough so that it, when it got energized, she didn't fight it, she loved it, cared for it. When it got energized, then she could meditate very, very well. But it wasn't just energizing the body. It was the whole method she was using of learning how to understand what was happening now as being mindful and caring for this moment. So I know that the first talk that today, there's so many things I should be saying about just how to meditate for those who haven't got much idea of meditation. But to keep it really, really simple, something you can remember and something which is highly effective, whether you are walking, whether you are sitting, whether you are lying down, whether you are eating. And that is the meditation method based on the Emperor's Three Questions. Taught that a lot when I was in the US and Canada. It's very, very effective. You know the story of the Emperor's Three Questions? It was in my first book. I got that from a story from Leo Tolstoy, which I read as a student. What is the most important time? Now. So don't try having goals and aspirations for what you're going to get in the future. That is just losing this present moment. So remember that every time you want something, you're sending your mind out into the future. Every time you're angry at somebody or feel guilty about yourself, you're just sending your mind back into the past. All of that is not as important as this present moment right now. So in this retreat, try and be here as much as possible in this moment. But how can you do that? And the second question was, in the story, was who is the most important person in the whole world? And it was the person in front of you, whoever that happened to be. And I adapt that to meditation. What is the most important meditation object in the whole world? When your eyes are closed, whatever you're aware of right now is the most important meditation object in the whole world. So if this moment is the most important, and whatever you're aware of right now is the most important object, then you have mindfulness. That was my definition of awareness. Giving importance to this moment, no matter what it is. It's called unconditional mindfulness. Many people are aware, but I'm sleepy, I shouldn't be sleepy, I should be doing something else. I'm thinking stupid thoughts, I shouldn't be thinking stupid thoughts. That is trying to get rid of stuff. It's not being mindful. So really being mindful is in this moment, or whatever it is that you are aware of in this moment, give it importance. And the last of the Emperor's Three Questions, the only thing to do, what are you supposed to be doing? Striving? Attaining? Watching this? Doing that? No! Your job is just to care. The most important thing to do is to care. Now is the most important time. The meditation, the object in front of your mind right now is the most important. And the only thing to do is to care for this moment. It will cure itself. Your job is to care for it. You don't go trying to make a tree grow. When it doesn't grow in time, you don't beat it with a stick. Come on, I told you to grow. Now, I need something. Forced fertilizer just makes it sick. So the only way, how can you make trees grow? You just care for them. You nurture them. They grow by themselves. How do you make human beings grow? You nurture them. You care for them. They grow by themselves. How do you make the mind peaceful? You care for it. It becomes peaceful all by itself. If you care for it. So we use this wonderful caring. Not curing, but caring. So how does that relate to your meditation? Your body. It's when you close your eyes, it's right there in front of you in this present moment. How does it feel? Please care for your body. If you care for it, it relaxes. But if you're trying to train it, come on, sit up straight, everybody. Come on, sit up straight. Thank you for not following my orders. You're very wise. But sometimes your body doesn't want to sit up straight. It injures it. You don't force the body into a particular posture. You're aware and you're kind until you find the best position for your body. That is why we have these chairs. We have so many chairs here. So why is most of you sitting on the floor? Kidding yourself. Many of you are too old to sit on the floor. Be honest. So we have the chairs because they are comfortable, so you can care for your body. Or you can lean back against the wall, which is also a very lovely posture. Ah, yes. That is how you're caring for your body. Mindful of it, caring for it, and then you find you can sit for long periods of time without too much stress or sickness, no pain. If you can do that with your body and it works, then you try that with your mind. How do you get your body to relax? Same way you get your mind to relax. That way the body relaxes too. You're kind to this mind. Find out the best position for it. So with your sitting down with your eyes closed, we close our eyes because we can become much more sensitive to our body and to our mind. So what we do, my eyes closed, we feel our body, how's it feeling, if it's tired, if it's aching, if it's got a pain, we try and do something about it to lessen that. And if you have a cough, for goodness sake, please cough. Otherwise we've got something which I call the volcano effect. And the volcano effect is when you plug the vent of a volcano. It builds up power, it builds up energy and pressure until it blows. It's going to blow eventually. And once a volcano blows, it puts all these toxic gases and hot liquid all over the vicinity. It makes a huge noise as well. Just like when people, they say, I'm not going to cough. I'm not going to do it. It just builds up pressure. And builds and builds and builds. And when you do cough, they can hear you in the kitchen. They can probably hear you in Bodhidharma Monastery as well. So loud. And all this toxic liquid just goes around all the people sitting next to you. It's very unhealthy. So I call that, so just a little cough now. Exactly. You don't have the volcano effect. And it's obviously just being kind, not controlling. All the controlling stuff, that causes the problems. So we learn how to be aware of our body. Relax it, be kind to it. And you get so relaxed, so peaceful, that usually you overcome any sicknesses that way. Because you're relaxed, you're not stressed, you're not tense. Just the same way that when you go to the toilet to do what in Australia we call a number two, do you try and force it out? If you do, you get hemorrhoids. Even little things. You sit down on the toilet and you just relax. You let go. Take your time. If you force things and try and control it, then you'd be in big trouble, won't you? We know that in life. The same thing in meditation as well. If you force it, especially if you try and force the mind to let go of the past and the future, you've got what I call the hemorrhoids of the mind. It really hurts inside. You get stressed out. So it's bad. You learn how just to look at this body, relax it, relax it, relax it, until the body gets so relaxed, it just feels so easy and so loose and so nice. Means you can sit comfortably. Or you do walking meditation. We've got these walking meditation halls, if you haven't checked them out yet, one through there, one over there, and one in the room next. You can walk anywhere in this place. There's lots of places you can do walking meditation, especially if it's nice and sunny outside. Cold in the mornings, but some very beautiful afternoons here. So do walking meditation, and there again, you just walk naturally. Don't walk fast, don't walk slow. Just walk naturally so it feels good, just the right pace. Not too fast, not too slow. What do we call that? The middle way. If you need to walk slow, fine. If you need to walk fast, fine. But sometimes I've seen this, that when people do the slow walking meditation, seeing that it's really weird to have a competition. Who can walk slowest? Because they think the slowest is the most mindful. That is so stupid. It's not the slowest is the most mindful. So you just walk naturally. You can feel just the right way of walking. And because we have the walking places here, you just walk backwards and forwards. Well, what am I supposed to do? The answer is nothing. Just walk. What's the purpose? Exactly. No purpose. You start at one end, you go to the other end, you come back again, you always end up where you started. That's just life. You start life with no teeth, no hair, and with nappies, and most of you will finish if your life with no teeth, no hair, and with nappies, incontinent. You don't know anything when you begin life, and you don't know much when you end life as well. It's called Alzheimer's. And I was going to be very careful as a meditation teacher, because I did a seminar in Singapore a few months ago. There was a doctor who was in the Alzheimer's ward. He's an expert professor of Alzheimer's, why it happens, and just defining it, describing it, is when you can't remember the past, you can't plan the future, and you get socially disengaged. And I said, that's what I've been teaching everybody to do in meditation. I've been teaching people to become demented. Let go of the past. Don't worry about the future. Live in solitude. Be socially disengaged. And that's the definition of dementia. It's us. Just like I always wondered, what anorexia meant. You know, one day I looked in a dictionary. You know what anorexia means? The definition, I saw this in the dictionary, said you look in the mirror and you think you're fat. That's me! I now know my condition is anorexia. Every time I look in the mirror, I think I'm fat. Anyway, where was I going? Meditation, yeah. So you do some walking meditation. Now what you do, just like sitting meditation, first of all you feel your body, you relax it. So you walk comfortably, not too fast, not too slow. To be able to do that, you have to be aware of your body moving. When you're sitting meditation, you have to be aware of how you're sitting. And you're being kind to how you're walking. Kind to how you're sitting. Very simple awareness and kindness, being in this moment. When you are kind and aware of how you are walking meditation, and you're kind and aware of how your body is going, not only does it relax you, but it also is called substitution. It substitutes all the thoughts and the worries for something which is happening in this moment, which is far more pleasant. Right now, you're just walking. No goals, no aim, not trying to get somewhere. You're just being here, just being with the walking. When you're sitting down, you're not trying to attain something, you're just trying to be here, aware, being kind to your own body. And then when you start to be aware of your mind, do exactly the same, just be kind to your mind, care for it. If you care for it, then it grows like a tree. If you try and force it, then it gets stunted. So how are you caring for it? There's something which I've been developing, which I've been calling the peaceometer. In your car, you have a speedometer. And if you're not mindful of the speedometer, you get pinged by the police for speeding. We're well known in our local Armadale police station. It's about every two or three weeks one of the Anagarikas gets pinged for speeding. It's very embarrassing. We're supposed to be monks. We're supposed to be mindful. We're supposed to be just take it easy. And those Anagarikas keep getting done for speeding. Anyway, it's not my fault. So here we're speedometer. If you're mindful of it, aware of it, then you can actually see how fast you're going. And if it's too fast, then you can learn how to slow down. You have a thermometer, you know, on the aircon. If it's too hot, you can turn it down. Too cold, you can turn it up. It gives you feedback. So you also got in your mind what I call the peaceometer. How peaceful are you? So in order to understand that, just you ask yourself from a number from 1 to 10, how peaceful are you? Right now, don't shout it out. 10 is very agitated, 1 is very peaceful. How peaceful are you, how agitated are you? Give it a number. All that really achieves is for you to be aware of this thing I call the peaceometer. And once you're mindful of the peaceometer, then you soon learn from trial and error how to bring that needle of the peaceometer down, 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 so it gets closer to 1. What makes it go up to 10? All the worry and concern and the anxiety and the trying, that's what makes it go up. So we're learning how to get the peaceometer to go down, down, down. This is where you get the feedback from. So when you are walking meditation, once you're walking quite sort of comfortably, look at your peaceometer. How peaceful are you? How agitated are you? And what do you need to do to become more peaceful? What makes you more agitated? Throughout the day, see if you can notice that peaceometer. Understand what I mean by that. And then learn how to recognize what makes you peaceful, what makes you agitated. And then you have something throughout the day. And there you will learn. Amazing thing. That real kindness, real compassion, real care. Not may you get happy and well. Not may you have a good day, but real kindness, opening the door of your heart to yourself no matter what you feel like, no matter what happens right now. A real compassion, otherwise called letting go, letting this moment be, that is the cause for peace. Yes, when you go back you have to work. But right now, this is your holiday. Club Med Serpentine. It's not work. This is fun. Relax. Find some peace. By looking at your peaceometer. And learning. Trial and error. What makes you more peaceful? What makes you more agitated? When you're sitting, when you're walking, when you're eating, when you're laying down, find that out. Because when you're sitting, posture, whatever's comfortable for you, look at all the other people here, sit in the chairs, lean back, have a few more cushions, whatever you can do to make yourself comfortable. And the little teddy bears, they also will help you become more peaceful, because they bring up a bit of kindness. Again, people sometimes don't know what kindness is, but you hug a little teddy bear, put it in your lap, and you find, because I'm the big monk, you put it in your lap and straight away you feel really kind and really soft. It's very hard to have ill will when you're hugging a teddy bear. So, and actually this, I had to send an email this morning, just got the final proof for my next book coming out soon. You know what it's called? Bear Awareness. It's spelled B-E-A-R, not B-A-R-E. Bear Awareness. So this is Bear Awareness. So you hug your little teddy bear, it feels really nice, really good. And this is how you learn what kindness is. And you feel my peaceometer is really getting very peaceful. So this is why we have teddy bear meditation. Oh, you already got a photo on you. I don't know what it is with Indonesians. I mentioned this in Canada and US and Singapore. It's okay, I'm not criticizing, but the Guinness Book of Records for photo taking per capita, I must be Indonesia. Right? I can understand, what do you want to take a photo of me for? It's not as if I'm like Brad Pitt or something. I'm old and ugly. So anyway, that's what I think anyway. So anyway, bear awareness, kindness, you find the peace on the inside of you. And learn how to deal with that. Okay, so it's 9 o'clock now. So you can do your bear awareness, watch your peaceometer. You can meditate flat out in your room if you need to do it, and don't have to set your alarm clocks. This is something I will guarantee that you may need an alarm clock to get up early in the morning. But if you take a nap now, I guarantee you will wake up in time for lunch. That's something which you don't need alarm clocks for. You will be there. It's important to you. And have a wonderful day. And I think that you don't have to, though. You can have a miserable day if you want. You're allowed to. That's not in the rules. You have to be happy. And, Dada, did you want to do the pseudo class this afternoon? Or I think we said no, didn't we? Just have a nice free and easy day. Yeah, have a free and easy day. But because some of you haven't meditated before, is that the case? You all roughly know what meditation is? Okay. Okay, so hands up if you know what meditation is, you feel comfortable enough. But those people who put their hands up, can you please tell me what it is? I need to learn. I'm only joking. So just have a nice, calm, peaceful day. And this evening, was it 8 o'clock? 8 o'clock, we have a Q&A session. Do our chanting at 10 to 8. And then we do 8 o'clock to 9:30 usually, a Q&A. So, does everybody feel comfortable enough to have enough information just to get going? It's not really what you do, it's how you do it. Whether you're sleeping, whether you're walking, whether you're eating, whether you're just sitting down, just watching the trees grow. It's how you're doing it. So make sure you just make peace, be kind, be gentle, be in this moment, be kind, and then you'll find peace will come to you. And just have a look at that peaceometer, get to know it, and then get to know what makes you peaceful and what makes you agitated. Okay, great. So, have a happy day. And we've got lovely pillows there, so you can see how many of you can wear out the pillow. Flat out meditation, if you need it. Okay, have a great time. Bye bye. Bye bye. Sadhu. Sadhu. Bye bye. 拜拜。I was supposed to have noble silence, but let's do that tomorrow maybe. First day, get to know each other. Good idea? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
This is from Gerald.
Gerald, what's this?
Tea.
Tea?
Yeah.
So much tea. Okay, how's Karen? She had an operation.
Yeah.
She's fine, okay.
Small operation.
Okay. Very
put
good.
Put in your frame in the monastery.
Hey, this is good stuff.